Final chapter, A Tale for Tom Long. It was in the year 1895, said Hattie Bartholomew, that you and I, Tom, skated all the way to Ely, the year of the famous Great Frost. That day, on the way home from Ely, we met Barty, and he gave us a lift. She smiled. I'd never really talked to Barty before then, for I was shy in company. I still am, Tom. But that day was different. Barty and I were alone together, and we talked, and we began to know each other. Barty used to say afterwards that before he had turned the gig into the drive here, he'd as good as made up his mind that he wanted me for his wife. So, some time later, he made me a proposal, and I accepted him, and Aunt Melbourne was only too glad to get me off her hands. I was married on Midsummer Day, a year or so after the Great Frost. Midsummer Eve was the eve of my wedding day. Doing the last of my packing that night, I remembered my skates, and that made me remember you, Tom. I'd kept the skates where I'd promised you that I would, and I knew that I had to leave them there, although it was so long since I'd seen you. I wrote a note of explanation and left it with the skates. I found it, said Tom, signed and dated. Yes, dated Midsummer's Eve, in one of the last years of the old century. That Midsummer Eve was very hot, sultry and thundery. I couldn't sleep. I thought of my wedding the next day, and for the first time I thought of all I would be leaving behind me, my childhood and all the times I'd spent in the garden with you, Tom. There was a thunderstorm coming nearer, and there was lightning. I got out of bed and looked out of my window. I could see the meadow and the elm tree and even the river bank. I could see it all by the flashes of lightning. Then I thought I would look at the garden by the same light. I had a great longing to see it. I went into an empty bedroom at the back of the house, overlooking the garden, a spare room. I think I know the one you mean, said Tom. I stuck my head through the door once. Well, I stood at the window and looked over the garden. The storm was very close. The lightning flashes made everything very clear. I could see the yew trees and the fir tree and the greenhouse as if by daylight. Then I saw you.
Me? Cried Tom. But I don't understand. When? I didn't see you.
You never looked up. I think you had been walking round the garden, for you appeared from one of those little corner paths and walked across the lawn to the house porch. You looked as thin through as a piece of moonshine. You were wearing your pyjamas. They were pyjamas, weren't they, Tom? In those days, most boys wore nightshirts, and I didn't know of pyjamas. Your pyjama jacket was flapping open, I remember. You reached the porch, and I suppose you went indoors, for that was the last I saw of you. I stayed on at the window. I said to myself, "Ah, he's gone, but the garden is here. And the garden will always be here. It will never change." And do you remember the tall fir tree, Tom, with ivy all the way up? I've stood under it many a time as a child, when there was a high wind and felt the earth heaving under my feet, as if the roots were pulling like muscles. That Midsummer Eve, when the storm was at its worst and I was watching it, a great wind caught the fir, and, oh, Tom, it was terrible to see. The lightning struck it, and it fell.
There was a deep silence, and Tom remembered the silence he had heard after the falling of that tree, and the cry from the upper window that he had heard in it.
And I knew then, Tom, that the garden was changing all the time, because nothing stands still, except in our memory.
What happened next? Asked Tom.
Oh, the next day, Abel complained of the fir tree and that it had ruined one of his asparagus beds in its fall, but I forgot the fir tree and the garden, and you too, Tom, because this was my wedding day. Barty and I were married, and we went to live on one of his father's farms in the Fens, and we were very happy.
Then?
Well, things went well for us. Much better than they did for the cousins here. All three of them were in the family business to begin with. Then Hubert and Edgar went off, and James carried on alone. He married and raised a family, but his wife died, and the business went from bad to worse, and in the end he decided to emigrate. Before he went, he sold everything, house, furniture, and whatever land was left. Barty and I came over for the auction. The house already looked very different by then. James had been short of money, and so he'd sold the first two meadows, and then the orchard, and then even the garden. The garden had quite gone, and they were building houses at what had been the bottom of it, with their garden strips where the yew trees and the lawn had been. None of the trees was left standing, except Trixie. You can still see Trixie standing in one of those gardens. Tom said, "So that's Trixie." At the auction, Barty bought some of the furniture that I fancied, the barometer you saw, and the grandfather clock that I'd always loved to hear striking. When I was a little girl, Tom, I used willfully to misunderstand its hour sometimes in the morning, and get out of bed and go downstairs before the maids, before sunrise even, to play in my garden.
"But you couldn't take the grandfather clock away with you to the Fens," said Tom. "It couldn't be moved."
"It never needed to be moved," said Mrs. Bartholomew. "For Barty bought the house. He would always buy anything I fancied if he could, but he said it wasn't a gentleman's house any more with no garden to it. He made flats out of it, and he let them out."
"And then you came to live here?"
"Well, not then. Barty and I were very happy in the Fens. We had two children, boys. They were both killed in the Great War. The First World War, they call it now."
Mrs. Bartholomew did not cry, because she had done all her crying for that so long ago.
"Then, many years later, Barty died, and I was left quite alone. That was when I came here, and I've lived here ever since."
Mrs. Bartholomew stopped, as if that were the end of her story, but Tom prompted her.
"Since you've come to live here, you've often gone back in time, haven't you?"
"Gone back in time?"
"Gone back into the past."
"When you're my age, Tom, you live in the past a great deal. You remember it, you dream of it."
Tom nodded. He understood so much now, why the weather in the garden had always been perfect, why time in the garden had sometimes jumped far ahead and sometimes gone backwards. It had all depended upon what old Mrs. Bartholomew had chosen to remember in her dreams. Yet perhaps Mrs. Bartholomew was not solely responsible for the gardens being there night after night these last weeks, for she remarked to Tom now that never before this summer had she dreamed of the garden so often, and never before this summer had she been able to remember so vividly what it had felt like to be the Little Hattie, to be longing for someone to play with, and for somewhere to play.
"But those were exactly the things I wanted here this summer," said Tom, suddenly recognising himself in Mrs. Bartholomew's description. He had longed for someone to play with, and for somewhere to play, and that great longing beating about unhappily in the big house must have made its entry into Mrs. Bartholomew's dreaming mind, and had brought back to her the Little Hattie of long ago. Mrs. Bartholomew had gone back in time to when she was a little girl wanting to play in the garden, and Tom had been able to go back with her to that same garden.
"But these last few nights, before last night," said Tom, "you've hardly dreamt of the garden at all. You've been dreaming of winter and skating."
"Yes," said Mrs. Bartholomew, "of skating to Ely, the farthest I'd ever been from home, of growing up and of Barty. I dreamed less and less of the garden, and of you, Tom."
"I suppose you couldn't help that," said Tom, "if you were growing up. I noticed the night before last in the gig you talked to Barty all the time, never to me."
"You were getting thinner, thinner through, every winter that I saw you," said Mrs. Bartholomew, "and by the end of that drive home with Barty, you seemed to have vanished away altogether."
Tom said, without bitterness, "And so, last night
I dreamt of my wedding day, and of going away from here altogether to live in the Fens.
And last night, said Tom, when I went down and opened the garden door, the garden wasn't there any more. That was when I screamed out. I called to you, but I never really thought you could hear me.
Oh, you woke me, said Mrs. Bartholomew. I knew it was Tom calling to me for help, although I didn't understand then. I couldn't believe you were real until I saw you this morning.
Tom said, we're both real, then and now. It's as the angel said, time no longer. From far downstairs in the hall came the sound of the grandfather clock striking. It struck two, and Mrs. Bartholomew, who seemed to understand its language, said the hour must be 11. Tom's aunt must be wondering where he was. Tom went downstairs to ask whether he might take a mid-morning cup of tea with Mrs. Bartholomew. Aunt Gwen was much too surprised to object or even to question him. He came back to Mrs. Bartholomew, and she had just brewed the tea and brought out the seed cake to eat with it. Over this they settled down to talk of the garden. They exchanged tales and secrets. Tom asked after Abel, and Mrs. Bartholomew said that he had married Susan, and they had had a large family and lived happily. Then Tom told her that Abel had been the only other person besides herself ever to see him.
Oh, fancy that, said Mrs. Bartholomew, much struck. And Aunt Melbourne was always so scornful of Abel. She used to say he was as stupid as a cow in a meadow.
Well, said Tom warmly, the cows in the meadow could see me, and she never could. Mrs. Bartholomew laughed at that. She could afford to laugh at Aunt Melbourne now, and then she in her turn told Tom a secret of the garden. She confessed to a disobedience of long ago.
You told me not to carve marks and initials on the tree trunks, Tom. But when you taught me how to swarm Trixie, I carved out both our names there. A long, thin cap for you, Tom, wearing a hat for me. Oh, dear, it did look ridiculous. I never told you that.
I once planned to climb the yard fence to look at Trixie, said Tom. I wonder if I should have found the mark there.
It may still show.
So their talk of the garden rambled on until the grandfather clock struck for noon, and Tom jumped up, for he knew he must go. Lunch would be ready downstairs, and after lunch he was to be driven home.
Oh, but you'll come again, cried Mrs. Bartholomew. And what about that brother of yours that I saw in Ely? What was his name?
Peter, said Tom, and started guiltily to think how he had forgotten Peter, first of all in the horror of losing the garden, and then in the amazement and joy of finding it again in Mrs. Bartholomew's remembrance. He sat down again and told her about Peter, and especially of how Peter had loved to hear about the garden and of their adventures there.
"You must certainly bring him to visit me," said Mrs. Bartholomew firmly. "Will you be sure to tell Peter that I shall be expecting him?"
Tom promised. He found that, after all, he was looking forward eagerly to going home. There would be the warmth of that homecoming, and when the welcomes were over, he would draw Peter aside into the little back garden and whisper,
"Peter, I've the secret of the other garden to tell you, and I've an invitation for you from Hattie."
Meanwhile, Tom must really say goodbye to Mrs. Bartholomew now, or he would be late for lunch and for going home. Already Aunt Gwen was anxiously looking out for him on the floor below. From the front door of Mrs. Bartholomew's flat, Tom saw her on the watch, and Mrs. Bartholomew saw her too.
"Goodbye, Mrs. Bartholomew," said Tom, shaking hands with stiff politeness, "and thank you very much for having me."
I shall look forward to our meeting again, said Mrs. Bartholomew, equally primly.
Tom went slowly down the attic stairs. Then, at the bottom, he hesitated. He turned impulsively and ran up again, two at a time, to where Hattie Bartholomew still stood. Afterwards, Aunt Gwen tried to describe to her husband that second parting between them.
He ran up to her, and they hugged each other, as if they'd known each other for years and years, instead of only having met for the first time this morning. There was something else too, Alan, although I know you'd say it sounds even more absurd. Of course. Mrs. Bartholomew's such a shrunken little old woman. She's hardly bigger than Tom anyway. But you know, he put his arms right round her, and he hugged her. He hugged her goodbye, as if she were a little girl.